The title of the lesson this morning is straightforward. Nothing mysterious about it, really. What you see is what you get. And I want to start off in this study of anger by relating to you the little incident hardly rates as an incident because nothing happened, really, to speak of, except what I'm going to say. But it reminded me of the importance of controlling anger and what can happen when we don't control anger. I guess it was probably about 6 days ago, if I recall, that my wife and I were traveling back home here in the city, and I was approaching a traffic light to make a right turn, and just as I was approaching it, turned yellow. So I slowed down and came to a stop before making a right on red, which I was permitted to do at that corner. Well, I had noticed in my rearview mirror that there was this big black SUV right behind me. And apparently he was impatient with me and didn't like it, maybe because I didn't try to proceed through the yellow or even red light and make my right turn. But I had barely come to a stop when I noticed he just pulled around me into the other lane and went around me and made his right turn in front of me. To the point that if I had proceeded to make my right on red, I could have hit him. But what bothered me even more, I'll have to admit, was the fact that in situations like that, it's like people are sending me a message. It's like they're calling me slowpoke or something like that. Stupid, you ought to know to go ahead. You're too slow. I'm going to pull in front of you. My impulse was to get angry. And I'll have to admit that in situations like that, the baser side of me envisions doing bad things to people. I mean, just for a moment now, I don't want you to think too badly of me, but just for a moment, I visualize myself ramming into the back of that big black SUV in front of me. Serves him right, I'll wreck him, step on the gas, catch up with him, and well, that was momentary, though. That was just the human, reflexive, impulsive side of me coming out, at least in my brain. But then I quickly realized, no, this is not the response, even in my attitude of a Christian. And I have to talk to myself in situations like that. Remind myself, in the big scheme of things, it doesn't matter. Tomorrow you will have forgotten all about this. Well, I haven't, 6 days later. But see, I've deliberately been trying to retain it in my head because I knew I wanted to use it as an illustration to open this sermon. But if I had given in to my anger, what would have happened? What if I had rammed the back of that SUV? Well, the driver might have gotten out and just got into an argument, and he would have maybe hit me, or if he had a gun, might have shot me. People have been shot over road rage incidents and so forth. And besides that, I mean, there would have been two vehicles to repair. I probably would have been arrested for vehicular assault or something like that. And it would have far-reaching consequences in my life. Instead of doing that, I recognized that I need to control my anger. Let it go. In the whole scheme of things of life, it doesn't matter. Just let it go. You'll forget about it. Actually, there have been incidents like that in my life. And so it's happened to me before. I get honked at from behind because I'm not pulling off from a stop sign or a traffic light quickly enough for some people. And so things like that tend to aggravate me and momentarily make me anger, but I have to talk to myself, calm myself down, and realize it doesn't really matter. Does it really matter what that other driver thinks of you or your driving abilities? No. How is that going to have a practical effect on your life? But if I give in to my anger, my hurt feelings, that is going to have a big practical effect on my life, perhaps for the rest of my life. So I'll start off with that personal illustration and move on now. So one of the most outstanding and consequential emotions is anger. We've even started inventing new expressions for it. When I was growing up, I had never heard of road rage. I guess road rage occurred, but we had not given it a name. Now it is so prominent that we've given a name to it, road rage. When I was growing up, we'd never heard about anger management. Oh, we might have heard about anger management under different expression like self-control, but people having to go to classes for anger management, I'm not saying that the people didn't get angry back then and that they did not manage their anger properly. I'm just saying we didn't have those words for it. Think about it. Anger is only one letter away from the word danger. Put a D on the front of anger, what do you got? Danger. So that illustrates the connection between the two. Anger is a dangerous thing, and it's dangerous because by its nature, it is irrational. People are not thinking rationally. They're not thinking logically. They're not looking forward to the consequences of what they're about to do when they're so angry they're going to do it. That's the problem with anger. It should not be surprising, then, that anger is at the bottom of many social ills and problems, and that the Scriptures have much to say about anger. Now, before I get into all the problems with anger, let me observe that anger is not wrong per se. And this is obvious from the fact that the Scriptures ascribe it sometimes to the righteous. God, for instance, is said to be angry. In Psalm 7, verse 11, it says, He has indignation. That's a long word for anger, basically. He has indignation every day. That's because people sin so much every day. And He responds to it with anger. In Mark 3, verse 5, Jesus is said to have been angry with His opponents who were so hypocritical. And then, of course, in Ephesians 4, verse 26, it says, be angry and yet do not sin. So that implies it is possible to be angry without sinning. Anger, per se, is not sinful. As a matter of fact, it might be said that anger is natural, and it can be useful. The capacity for anger seems to be inherent in humans. It's part of our nature to respond with anger to some situations. So, from that, I would say it's an outgrowth of the soul that God has given us. It is God-given, and everything given by God must be good. So there is some good, then, that anger in some instances can serve. For instance, anger can be useful in motivating people to do what needs to be done, especially if the work or the task is daunting. From a strictly biological standpoint, the arousal of anger may be essential to the release of the adrenaline necessary to perform a difficult and dangerous task. It would certainly seem that there is something wrong with the man or woman who does not become angry about sin. For instance, Paul seems to say in 2 Corinthians 7, verse 11, that the Corinthians' anger prompted them to correct a bad situation. He says, for behold, what earnestness this very thing, this godly sorrow has produced in you. What vindication of yourselves. What indignation. What fear. What longing. What zeal. What avenging of wrong. In everything you demonstrated yourselves to be innocent in the matter. They had become indignant about a certain thing they needed to become indignant about, and as a result of their indignation, they had corrected the problem. So let's consider then, after having considered that anger is not wrong per se, that it can be useful if it is channeled properly and controlled. Let's recognize that so often, though, when human beings become angry, they don't control or channel their anger properly. Let's observe that anger in people has a great potential for wreaking harm, and perhaps does so more often than not. Think about the wrongdoings that we refer to in the phrase, crimes of passion. Ever heard of crimes of passion? Passion there often and essentially refers to anger. People commit crimes of passion. It is so sad how a moment of uncontrolled anger can have negative consequences that live as long as the person who got angry lives. So, it's a problem. Happened to see something of a crime show last night, and it was a review of a very sad case occurred 30 years ago in upstate New York. you may recall it, a little child, Derek Roby, just short of 5 years old, was killed. And it was soon found out that his murderer was a 13-year-old boy in the neighborhood. It killed him terribly. It choked him and so forth. It was terrible. It was such a sad situation. Why did a 13-year-old boy kill a 4-year-old boy? Well, the most likely answer to that was, and the answer he seemed to give, was that he had been bullied and he had been hurt by others. And since he had been hurt by others, it gave him some sort of experience of pleasure, freedom from pain, release of his anger, to kill this 4-year-old boy. And since he was about 13 years old then, he'd been spending his adult life, even his teenage years, in prison. Eric Smith, by the way, he was just paroled to Queens, New York. I cite that example as an instance of what happens when we don't control our anger and we don't think about the fact that whatever pleasure it may give to us to release our anger for a few seconds or a few moments, the consequences of that illegitimate release of anger is going to perhaps outlive us and will have ramifications not only for our future, but for our future lives. So, when you're angry, and I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself to say this, but when we're angry, what we need to do is count to 10. Stop. Just stop what you're doing. Everything in your emotions may be telling you to go ahead and release that anger and take it out on someone else and get your vengeance, but stop. Walk away from the situation if that's what it takes. Calm down. Think about it. Then if you need to, come back to that situation and address it if it is something that has to be addressed. Anger is so dangerous because it often combines two human evils. That is, first of all, ill will or malice, and a lack of self-control. I said toward the beginning of the lesson, anger by its nature is irrational. An angry person is typically not thinking rationally, not assessing the pros and the cons, or should I do this or not. It's by its very nature irrational. We're not thinking logically. We're not looking ahead and thinking about, if I do this, what's going to happen to me? Instead, the momentary release of that anger has far-reaching consequences. It says in Proverbs 19, verse 19, a man of great anger shall bear the penalty, for if you rescue him, you will only have to do it again. And isn't that so often true? This is the nature of life. We're going to encounter situations and people that make us angry. And we're going to have to learn how to control our anger in those sorts of situations. If not, we're going to find ourselves being rescued, if that's even possible, from the consequences of our anger again and again. A glance at the consequences of anger ought to convince anyone of the seriousness of it, and I will just allude to these biblical examples quickly. Results in murder. That's a good example of what I've been saying, that people get angry, and in some cases they will even kill one another. And think about that, how much pain that brings to their lives, the life of the murderer, but also the lives of the family of the victim, because someone could not control his anger, at least in some instances. In Genesis 4, beginning with verse 5, it says, "But for Cain and for his offering, he, that is God, had no regard. So Cain became very angry, and his countenance fell." Now, what should Cain have done? The simplest thing to do would have been to just correct the problem. Simple. Okay, exchange your vegetables. Use them if you need to buy a lamb or whatever from your brother and offer the sacrifice that God had commanded. No, pride got in the way, I suppose. He wasn't willing to do that. So what did he do? He got angry, and in his anger, he killed his brother. There's the example of Simeon and Levi, two of the 12 sons of Jacob. Jacob refers to it in Genesis 49, verses 6 and 7. It talks about their anger because they had killed a whole town of people because of what one man, the prince of the city, had done to their sister sexually. This is the way their father describes that incident. This is not long before their father died, and he still remembers this. He says, "Do not let my soul enter into their council. Let not my glory be united with their assembly. Because in their anger they slew men, and in their self-will they lamed oxen. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will disperse them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel." Anger also results in self-destruction, as indicated in Job, the 5th chapter, verse 2. And there it says, "For vexation slays the foolish man, and anger kills the simple." The simple here referring to foolish people who don't think in more complex ways, particularly about the consequences of what they're about to do. In Proverbs 14, verses 17 and 19, it indicates there that anger results in folly, or that is, in foolishness. We're looking at Proverbs 14th chapter, verses 17 and then verse 29. It says in verse 17, "A quick-tempered man acts foolishly, and a man of evil devices is hated." And then in verse 29, "He who is slow to anger has great understanding, but he who is quick-tempered exalts folly." And then finally, along these lines, anger is productive of transgression or sin, evil. In Proverbs 29, verse 22, it says, "An angry man stirs up strife, and a hot-tempered man abounds in transgression." Anger is not conducive to the kind of conduct that is in compliance with God's standards of righteousness. In James 1, verse 20, there it says, "For the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God," does not bring it about, does not come up to the righteousness of God. Anger falls into the same category as slander and murder. It's interesting that in Jesus' Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 5, verses 21 and 22, Jesus places anger in the same category with things like slander and murder. He says, beginning in Matthew 5:21, "You have heard that the ancients were told, 'You shall not commit murder, and whoever commits murder shall be liable to the court.' But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be guilty before the court. And whoever shall say to his brother, 'Raca,' shall be guilty before the Supreme Court. And whoever shall say, 'You fool,' shall be guilty enough to go into the fiery hell." So he says, my standard is higher. You're not only not to murder someone, but you're not to give way to the anger and the slander that leads to murder. Stop it in its early stages before it ever progresses to the point of murder. So how serious anger is can be seen from the fact that the Scriptures mandate self-control and forbids any kind of anger that reflects a lack thereof. So that one who would be an elder, but yet is not self-controlled, is not qualified to be an elder, a leader in the church. Titus 1, verse 7. Having matured to the point of learning to control one's anger is so very important. In 1 Timothy 2, verse 8, it's not just elders, but even people who lead in prayer in the church are to be recognized as people who have matured to the point that they are not angry people. In 1 Timothy 2, verse 8, it says, "Therefore I want the men in every place to pray, lifting up holy hands without wrath and dissension." Wrath and dissension should not be part of our worship to God, our prayer. All types of undisciplined anger are condemned as works of the flesh in Galatians 5, verses 19 through 21. Now, this is interesting. Paul here just goes through a relatively long listing of the different kinds of sins people commit. It's not an exhaustive list, but some of what we would think, I guess, as outstanding consequential types of sins. He says, beginning in verse 19, "Now the deeds of the flesh are evident, which are immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmities, strife, jealousy, outburst of anger, disputes, dissensions, factions, envying, drunkenness, carousing, and things like these, of which I forewarn you, just as I have forewarned you, that those who practice such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God. It's interesting here that in the middle of this list, he begins to list things that involve social conflict or lead to social conflict. That part of the list begins with enmities, for instance, hatreds, hostilities. It goes on to strife. Some of them are even hard to distinguish. It's like he's trying to cover all his bases, as we would say today. Every aspect of anger or what would lead to conflict. But I counted them up. I think there are 15 specific types of sins that he has just mentioned that I've read. 8 of them have to do with social conflict or what would lead to social conflict. That's over half. That gives us an idea of how things like anger can be so consequential. So as a result of the problems of anger, Christians are forbidden to entertain thoughts and to give way to practices that would express anger or encourage anger. In Ephesians, the 4th chapter, verse 31, we have a passage to that effect. It says there, "Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you, along with all malice." And then in Colossians 3, verse 8, "But now you also put them all aside, anger, wrath, malice, slander, and abusive speech from your mouth." Think about how many sins come from uncontrolled anger. I mentioned murder, of course, and I mentioned some others just a moment. But even abusive speech, that's one of the first things that people do when they get angry with someone else. They start verbally reviling them or abusing them. Having tried to emphasize now how bad anger can be, let me just quickly go over some ways that we can control our anger. In the first place, we're not to be people who are easily provoked to anger. We've probably all known people that we know to be very sensitive, and you have to be careful how you say anything to them. Sometimes maybe something you never intended to be hurtful to them might be interpreted that way. In any event, we need to be careful not to provoke to anger. Speaking of the characteristics of love, Paul says in 1 Corinthians 13, verse 5, "Love does not act unbecomingly. It does not seek its own, is not provoked, does not take into account a wrong suffered." And if we're loving people, we're not going to keep books or records of what people have done wrong to us. Let it go. I know it's a hard thing to do. I struggle with it sometimes too. When I sense that people are mistreating me, there's this urge within me to be angry, to very least, if not to retaliate. But as I said, I have to talk to myself. I have to remind myself of the way a Christian should behave, what the scriptures require of me. So being easily provoked to anger is incompatible with love. We need to remember that, as it says in Psalm 103, verse 8, God is slow to anger. We need to be likewise. We need to be willing to overlook inconsequential provocation. When I was growing up, we had this saying that sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. And isn't that true? I mean, that's where adages come from. They come from life's experiences. And that little rhyme is intended to remind us, if he hasn't thrown sticks and rocks at you and he hasn't hurt you in any way, oh, he said something bad to you, that's what makes you mad. They're just words in there. They're sound waves in the air. That's all they are. You can walk away from that. And that's what you should do. Do not be easily provoked. Proverbs 19, verse 11. A man's discretion makes him slow to anger, and it is his glory to overlook a transgression. Second, we should not prolong anger. The Lord does not. He is slow to anger. Let me just read some of these. I know I've got a rather long list here. Let me just go over some of them to make the point. In Proverbs 15, verse 18, it says, "A hot-tempered man stirs up strife, but the slow to anger pacifies contention." Proverbs 16, verse 32. Isn't Proverbs such a wonderful, encouraging book? Encouraging in the sense that it encourages us to do what is right. It has so much wisdom there. In Proverbs 16, verse 32, it says, "He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who captures a city." So we should not feed or stoke our anger. Ann Landers, you may not remember Ann Landers, she was an advice columnist. She has passed away now, but this goes back to March 1990, and it was her gem of the day. It says, "Hanging on to resentment is letting someone you despise live rent-free in your head." I know it's hard to do. When we are mistreated, it's hard to overlook that and forget about it. But really, when we allow that, we're allowing those people to take control of our lives, whereas we could be perhaps enjoying ourselves, doing something else. Instead, we're thinking about that which hurts us. I know it's hard to do, but try to let go of the anger. Don't prolong the anger. But also, do not provoke others to anger. If we want to control anger, just be careful not to provoke others to anger. In Proverbs 15, verse 1, it says, "A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger." We don't want to suffer from the consequences of someone else's anger. Well, let's be careful how we talk to those people. Practice tact. Also, we need to pause before expressing ourselves. Maybe the thing we were going to say when we're angry would be right to say anyway, but it doesn't hurt to take a moment, think about what we're about to say or do, review the situation, and ask ourselves, is this the right way to respond? Actually, it might be hard to believe, but people can be too gentle. It is possible in some situations to be too nice or too gentle. Remember what I said at the beginning of the lesson. Sometimes anger is justified, and if it's channeled properly and carefully, it can serve some useful purposes. But most of the time, I think we're probably better off, no matter what the situation is, taking a moment to back off and think about it. If it's a situation that is causing us or others a great deal of anger, it is probably the better part of wisdom, nevertheless, to take a moment, back away, and ask ourselves, what's the best way to respond to this? I give Moses as an example in these scriptures here, because Moses had a problem with his anger, and it eventually got the best of him. In Exodus 2, verses 11 and 12, that's where he killed the Egyptian who was mistreating one of his fellow countrymen, an Israelite. And then eventually, in Exodus 32, verse 19, remember when he came down from Mount Sinai and he found the Israelites worshiping the golden calf? And remember what he did? He took the stone tablets on which the Ten Commandments were written and threw them down and broke them. Angry man. And then eventually his anger caused him to overlook God's command, disobey it, and he spoke rashly with his lips, it says in Psalm 106, verse 33. And then what happened was, he was not allowed to lead the children of Israel into the promised land. He wanted to do that. He asked God to reconsider and allow him to take the children of Israel into the promised land, but he wasn't allowed to do so. Why? Because he didn't control his anger. He let it get away from him. Consider whether anger is justified. Remember in Jonah's case, the Lord asked him, "Are you right to be angry?" We do need to ask ourselves, should I be angry? Does the situation justify the level of anger that I have? Let me just mention, consider the consequences. Back off and ask yourself, okay, if I give in to my anger and do this, what's going to happen? A lot of times, if you'll just stop and consider the consequences of releasing your anger, you'll say, no, not a good idea. Also, do not associate, we're told in Proverbs 22, verses 24 and 25, to those given to anger, that is, to those who are easily angered. And finally, seek a constructive way to vent anger. Maybe you go to the gym and you have an extra hard workout or something like that. Maybe you go out in the yard and do some yard work that involves something really strongly physical. Vent the anger in another way. Usually you will find, and this is what I have learned, when I have something that is troubling me a great deal, may be causing me a great deal of anger, to the point that I may toss and turn in my bed, to the point that I can hardly go to sleep, it seems, and I'm going to be up all night. Guess what? By the next morning when I wake up, the level of emotion that might have been up here, now it's down here. Sometimes I will even ask myself, what was I angry about? The night's rest has given me a new perspective on it and has made me rethink the situation. So give yourself time when you're angry to let that anger dissipate before you act. In conclusion then, anger, it would seem, is essentially incompatible with the life of a Christian. Now again, I say essentially, not altogether, but essentially. There are very few times when I have seen people angry who needed to be that angry and have seen good things come from that anger. About the only thing it is useful against and thus justified is sin. Now, that's what I'd like to see people angry about. The one time that I really see people angry, and I might even be grateful that they're angry, is when they're angry about sin. But oftentimes it's something else. It may be that there's at least one person here today who wishes to render obedience to the gospel of Jesus Christ, and we want to encourage that feeling in you to the point that you will act upon your inclinations. Come forward then, if you will, in faith and in repentance to confess before us your faith in Jesus Christ as the Son of God, and be baptized into Him for the forgiveness of your sins, so that you can leave this place as a child of God, as a Christian. That's what we would think you would want for yourself. If you have done that, but since then have fallen away and wish to be renewed in your relationship with God and His people by a confession of your sins here before us today, we bid you to come forward, let your needs be known, and we'll do our best to encourage you as together we now stand and sing.